we're going to do some exercise around it. Can you hear me? Are you okay? So it's kind of worth, first of all, considering what it means, dedication and aspiration, shifa. Dedication would be hechvetiyut, right? Mesirut, okay. And I once heard a Zen master talking in answering a question to some people about how to practice, whether to practice like this, whether to practice like that, or what combination or what form of practice is the right one. And he said, actually, it doesn't matter how you practice. What gets you there is if you practice as if your life depends on it. That's his answer. And we often tend to deal with the issues of what's the right way, sort of forgetting that it's one of the greatest of the paramis, one of the greatest of the qualities, which is your dedication and your hitmasrut, your aspiration, and that carries you even if you find this method or that method, this group or that group, this way or that way. But the power, the fire in your dedication is actually what will carry you forward. And so it's kind of worth asking us these questions. For example, is the Dhamma for us a choice? Or do we have no choice anymore? We thought we had a choice. Do we have a choice? Is it for us a choice? Well, maybe this or maybe that, maybe not. It's worth a question that we need to think about. What price we pay for it? What do we give for it? What do we give for it? Or we give up for it, for example. Is it something which is an addition to our life, or is it our life? Questions that really, I'm not giving answers here, these are questions that really we need to look at. And often we do look at these questions. It's not that we don't look, I'm sure all of us looking at these questions, but we need to give it some. I was thinking of now and in the past, the way the monks would burn themselves in the square to try and stop the Vietnam War, and I think about 70 Tibetan monks so far have burnt themselves in China to raise awareness about the position of the Tibetans and Tibetan Buddhism. So dedication is something more burning, and aspiration, shifa, is something more quiet fire that burns over a long term, long time. It's more of a slow fire, if you like. It's much more the images of like when you build a house. You say, okay, this may take me 2 years, and I've been through that, building my own house. Yeah, I'll put the first stone knowing that it's going to be a 2 year at least when I'm going to be doing this thing. So it's not something that you put the stone and you think, well, so maybe not another stone, well, all right, maybe another stone, you know. It's putting a stone and knowing you're going to be putting stones for the next couple of years. And so it's aspiration. And I think that there is a word in the Pali, atapa, which is translated, the Goenka voice in my mind is always this voice. He says, ardently. ardently, Goenka in his voice, ardent. And it comes actually in the Satipatthana Sutta, which is that When you practice with mindfulness, you need to practice with this quality of being really committed, serious. Ardent means keenness, means shifa. Keen, it's a fire. It's a fire of, you know, really being in there. And there is obviously, I'm not going into now, this is not the subject of this talk, but there is obviously a conflict between this and effort. Because aspiration, shifa, is not the same as effort. It's more shifa, it's like I'm walking there, but on the way there'll be, I climb a hill, it needs effort, and I'm going downhill, which needs no effort. And I'm yet same on the path. And so it's not the same as effort. Now, effort is more problematic. The aspiration, shifa, determination, I really think you can't do without it. It's like essential. Essential. Because of the nature of the mind that is scattered and pulling and pushing for us to what we like, what we don't like, we need to legayes it kol atzmenu. The whole being needs to be recruited in this direction. But it's not the same as effort, and we can have many practices which are totally effort-free. And as we go into a non-dual place, and even in the and some of the, actually even in the island, there are quotes from the Buddha was talking about, as we go further, we need less and less effort. We're not pushing, because effort is pushing against resistance. And shifa is not pushing so much against resistance, it's just setting direction. And in many non-dual teachers say, there's a real problem with effort. You need to be effortless. Effortless meditation means basically non-meditation, not doing anything, not pushing against any barriers, or no friction in chikuch, so there's nothing to push. And if indeed the mind, if you're, there's silence and the mind is silent, and the Buddha nature, and if it exists or however it exists, doesn't invite us for effort. Effort is like the taken mashu, or to push against a barrier. And we don't need effort, but every single one of the non-dual, the most non-dual teachers you can think of, all say you have to be very serious about what you're doing. You can't wobble. Nadned. You just have to be on the way. And very serious about it. You know, in some way or other, it's a fire that's burning. One of the things that feed the fire is tovanot, or realizations and understandings. They feed the fire and give you fire, because you feel the wow, and the wow, whoa, this is whoa. That's a powerful source of the fire. And it's interesting in English that the wow is inspiration, and the mesirut is aspiration, or shifa is aspiration, and they both come from breathing. Spirea is breathing, and expire is breathing out. Aspire is shifa, inspire is tovana, expire is to die. It all comes from the same word, to breathe, in Latin. So very often we need the more feminine quality of being, feminine quality of receiving, feminine quality of being quiet and receptive, even though we're overall very dedicated and the aspiration is still there. And one of the places where aspiration is there, but it has a feminine, more feminine quality, is the power of kmeha, of longing. And the Buddha was really encouraging longing, even though it seemed like desire, but it's not really desire, it's longing. Kameha? Yeah. It's the longing for liberation. This is something very strong in the tradition, and it's a very big source for our Nsirut. Without being effort that I must break the walls and I must get there and I must, you know, which is all kinds of problems with that. And maybe it's okay at the beginning, but after a while you really don't need that at all. Kmeha, longing, it's a power, and it comes from often from understanding of dukkha, and it's one of the you know, in a way, the best sources of mesirut for us, of determination, because it really comes from the heart. It comes from the heart saying, I want to get off the wheel of samsara. I can't go on like this. I can't live like this, just like a kaze puppet on a string with of every good and bad, good for me, bad for me, good, bad, good, bad, life like this automatic living. I can't anymore. And that creates the longing, and the longing creates the dedication. And the Buddha definitely encouraged longing as the best kind of desire. He said, if you want any desire, this is the best one. In the end, you can leave that as well. But it's good to have this kind of desire. And in some way or other, in the traditions that say that we have a Buddha nature, which is the Mahayana tradition says there is inside us the Buddha nature, it's expressed as longing. That is the Buddha nature. Our longing for liberation, our kmeha itself, is the Buddha nature. If we want to see the Buddha nature, we see it like that, as the longing for liberation. Because if we didn't have it at all, there would be no dharma. Basically, we wouldn't be able to go anywhere. We wouldn't. So the fact that we have an intuition for liberation, which is expressed in longing for freedom, is freedom talking in us inside conditions of being a person. But the freedom is talking and expressed as kameha, and it's often felt very deeply as coming home. I want to go home. In a spiritual sense, I want to come back home. I want to return to somewhere pure. I want to return to somewhere in a way perfect. I want to return to somewhere connected. Home being unity, the oneness, or the ilu oneness. And it really is. This longing and the returning is really kind of the basis of so much human mythology. If you think about the heroes, mythologies of the hero from ancient times, there's always been the mythology of going on the journey and coming home, of coming home to a bigger place, to coming home to our real nature, or our endlessness, or something beyond the small self. And it's all based on the longing, the urge, to leave home and go on the journey, and we usually come back home. So just a couple of points. What stops our longing and what encourages it? What stops our mesirut, our dedication, and what encourages it? One thing that stops it is what you might call spiritual laziness, or kind of atzlanut ruchani. And once there was a Tibetan, a famous Tibetan kind of crazy wisdom teacher called Drukpa Khinli. And he was seen in the monastery shouting to the Buddha. The Buddha wasn't there, but shouting to the fictional Buddha. He said, "We're the same. The only difference between us is that you had longing you are serious and I'm lazy. Otherwise we're just the same. And I think that there is an issue here for many of us. If we call it, we can call it atzlanut, but it's something we really know. It's a sense of tomorrow is, or I can go on, I'll do it tomorrow. Well, next week maybe I'll go on this great retreat that I've been waiting for, but meanwhile I'll manage and wait till next year, or wait till I'm no longer have to earn my living, or wait till, I don't know what the conditions are better, or till I have some more money and I can go abroad to Thailand, or you know, any conditions, and once the Mara was talking to the Buddha, and the Mara said, "You know, what's all this practice going on? You be joyful, be happy, be like a baby. The breast milk is always there. Why are you worrying? Why are you so busy practicing?" Well, just relax. There's plenty of time. You have a whole life of 80 years, and the teachings can come to you like breast milk. And the Buddha said, "Shut up. you have to practice as if your hair is on fire." Well, the hair on fire maybe is an image of fire. Atapa. So another source that stops our Nisirut dedication would be a sense of discouragement, a sense of hopelessness. It's all too big for me. I'm just a little person schlepping along in my life. All I am is a little Stephen. This is too big for me, this story. I'll manage something, I go, you know, a little practice, but let it other people. It's better for other people who are really dedicated yogis. I'm not that type, and I like things low key, in small doses. I'll take the Dharma in minunim homeopathy, minunim ketanim. It's enough for me, and a lot of that is a sense of going down on ourselves, that we are regard ourselves as being not powerful or small, and some of that is a sense of just a conditioning voice coming from our background, our parents, our whatever, our life, of chose onim. That it's actually a voice, a conditioning that tells us chose onim, and it's all too big for me. I'll do a little. And so we have to be watchful of that we don't have a conditioning issue of tadmit atzmi, self-esteem, dimuyatzmi, that it's not a message that is actually taking mashechata shatiach mitachat haraglaim shelanu, and giving us a sense of discouragement. It's all too big. Well, it's all right for the Buddha, and it's all right but it's all too big for me. And that's a voice, so if it's a voice, we can see it and deal with it. It's not a reality. Other places that would stop is if we actually get stuck, and this is very common, with pleasant but relatively minor spiritual gifts. If they're spiritual gifts, matanot badera. So we go along the path and we pick the fruit on the way, and we really say, "Oh, this is a wonderful spiritual journey." We pick some fruit, and you all know about the Sutta of the Heartwood, that Christopher likes it and teaches it all the time. But all the time we stop short. We say, "Well, this is enough for me. I'll go here, but that's enough." So we pick the fruit before, but we don't really go all the way. We keep stopping and saying, "Oh, that's good enough. That's all I can manage. That's fine."
יש לו דימוי נורא נחמד לזה, הוא אומר, זה כמו להיכנס לסופר ענק ורק לראות את המדף הראשון עם כל ה... מה שיש לנו דף הראשון, הסל, זה זה, 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 לקחת רק משם, ולא לראות את כל מה שיש, אולי בתוך הסופר יש מבצעים, אולי יש אקולוגי, לא יודעת, לוותר על כל מה שיש בעומק.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. So, and the final aspect that can stop us or take away is issues of sila. If we find that we kind of fall in down in sila, it can really take away the carpet from under the feet, and we don't always know how we do it. And I was thinking of Osho here. He's a great man, no doubt. He was a great, great teacher. But and other teachers also I've got in mind who really got stuck in the mud through ethical issues, that they just didn't clean the inner and outer world. And so the ethical issues are a boomerang. They come and hit you when you don't expect it. So yeah, and you don't even know where they're coming from. And often the ethical issues will rebound against you and can stop you and get you stuck in the mud, the box. What builds it? I've said what stops it. Some of the sources that build the aspiration. Firstly, a sense of there is something that you're doing, that you are aware of the issue of Mesirut itself, of dedication, that you do something about the dedication, that it's not just left as an assumption, there'll be the aspiration. It's not necessarily true, that you need to somehow, sometimes, actually consciously renew your aspiration and find wise ways of renewing the aspiration or the kmeha, or the longing. In the Tibetan tradition, all the time you take the vow of the Bodhisattva. I vow. It's a vow, it's a kind of a neda. I vow to keep going until all beings are enlightened. And in a Theravada, we do really have it in the refuge. The refuges, the three refuges, are very much renewing our faith. Our faith is really, faith is there, and refuge in the Buddha, refuge in the Dharma, refuge in the Sangha is where we renew our longing, our determination. And it's faith in the Dharma is it gives us back, but therefore the faith is not something that I have to artificially all the time keep raising faith, and every day I have to say 20 times Hail Mary. I have to go to Tefillah Shacharit Mincha Maariv every day, otherwise my aspiration will be lost. I'd have to say the refuges 10,000 times. It's not that. It's a sense of finding our home in the Dharma. A sense that if we look carefully, if we have faith in the Dharma looks after us. So there's a reward in that. We take care of the Dharma takes care of us. If we take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma and the Sangha, we realize we need less refuge in things that pass by, like the bank account. It just changes the view. And so it's not something one way that we have to generate faith because I have to kind of pull myself up all the time. You say in English, pull myself by my bootstraps. Is it expression in Hebrew?
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. In English you say, pull myself up by my own srochim of my shoes. And so it's not something we have to really do kind of artificially, because if we take refuge, if we have faith, we see the way. We look after the Dharma looks after us. It's life becomes that much more spacious and open and less threatening and struggling. And sometimes we need an act. We need to do an act of, this is where rituals sometimes help. We do sometimes an act of, I remember the act that really, really helped me was to have the party in Indore at the beginning of my 9 months retreat. Because I tried to do it a year before, and it was extremely difficult to hold a retreat in my own house. But I decided I wanted to do that. And I failed 1 year because I tried and I didn't have enough aspiration, enough determination. It just wasn't enough. So I had that ritual at Indore. Some of you were there. And you turned me into Christopher Robin. Uh-huh. And the purpose of that ritual really was, it was a nice, sweet, you were there, I think, right? It was a nice, sweet event, but it really worked, because I felt right. There was a before and an after. Before and after. And that's the purpose of a ritual, is to create a before and an after. In the middle of the stream of conditioning that would otherwise make you just go drifting along, a ritual can be really important. So here is a... And I have one of my favorite stories about this, which I must have said to you before, but I'll say it again anyway because I do love it. It's in the Conference of the Birds, and Yosef is being sold as a slave. It's a Sufi book, a Sufi big text, a 700-year-old text of poetry and stories. And Yosef is a beautiful soul, and the Bible he's so given is beautiful, and he's so beautiful, and he's always in the Sufi tradition, he's always sold in the marketplace. And that's like what we do with our soul, which is beautiful. Our Buddha nature is our beautiful shining Buddha nature. We sell it in the marketplace. We spend it working all our life in a high-tech company, our beautiful soul, and we don't even know we're doing it. Dugma. We spend it in the life. So Yosef is the image, and he's always being sold as a slave, as an eved. And he was being sold in the market, minimum 10,000 gold coins. And along came a little old lady and said, "I want to buy Yosef." And the slave owner said, "You, old lady, what can you give?" She said, "Here, I have two red threads. This I will give." And the slave owner said, "Come on, little old lady, no chance. I'm minimum first price is 10,000 gold coins. Your two red threads, you can't buy Joseph." And she said, "I know I can't buy Joseph, but I want it to be said, I want it to be known that I bid for Joseph with these two red threads." In other words, it's a ritual. I want it to be known, firstly to herself, that she wants it to be clear. And secondly, there's the image of the red thread, which is a very traditional image, and also in the Jewish tradition, also in the Hindu mysticism, and so on and so on and so on, and also in the Buddhist tradition as a thread of commitment. So I think on the inner side, that's perhaps the outer side. On the inner side, just to finish, what helps our commitment, our determination, is firstly joy. And remembering the experiences that we have that create joy, that are joyful on the journey, kind of remembering them, because we often tend to be critical of ourselves, but just be aware of, not to lose sight of the fact that on the way we do pick fruit, and that this is something we remember. We and sometimes, like for example, people often come to me and say, I can't practice at home. It's just impossible. I don't know. I just feel such a failure. I feel such a struggle, and so on. And I often respond by asking them, what is it that is joyful for them about stopping? What would make joy in stopping running? And that, regarding meditation as the joy of stopping, and that maybe do it lying down, or maybe doing it in such a way that it feels really right, like the Arabs that I taught in my course in Masra, that said for us meditation is like sitting there with a nargila, and except there's no nargila, but we are just sitting with a nargila. And it was such a nice image of the joy and the peace of just, and they were simple, not been on any retreat, nothing, but they got something about the act of meditation. They were doing it at home, with nargila and without. So it's like experiences on the journey that create joy support our determination. And the love, basically the love of practice, the love of a deeper place to be, rather than the ordinary samsara, hard work. And chesed, moments of chesed, moments of clarity, moments of blessings, of brachot, because they will always be there. They are bound to be there. Even maybe there's struggle because samsara is talking through us. So we'll have difficulty, we'll have struggle, we have body pains on the way, but there will always be, if we especially we're careful to watch. And finally, something which is more subtle, Nyotehadin, is that we are there as we are getting there. that actually, it's not that we are here and we need to get there. We are in some way already there as we are getting there. This may be subtle, but because we have in us the capacity for this, for practice, and we have in us qualities of freedom, we are not entirely kind of in a low place and we need to be in a higher place. Only, it's all uphill struggle. Like I saw Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, the book in the library here, and just reminded me of this quote from Pirsig that said, the only truth you bring up the mountain is the truth that you have, the truth you find at the top of the mountain is the truth you bring up with you. And it's true that we're not in a place of no Buddha nature, or no clarity, or no inner peace, or no ease, ninachut, or no wisdom, and all of that has to be found through hard work. We are in some way, and each time we practice, we are actually having a taste of the goal. We have a moment of peace and connection with our body and breath in the simple awareness. We are having a taste there of the goal. It's constantly, we're tasting it, and we should appreciate that. And that helps us on the journey. In the Zen tradition, the image is that we are both the arrow and the target. It's both inside us, the arrow and the target itself. That's both of us, both are here. So we're just going there, but we're also the goal. It's here. not there.
It's like the first noble truth and the third noble truth are together.
Yeah, exactly. It's the third noble truth is a truth. It's not an unattainable goal. If it was an unattainable goal, the first noble truth, the truth of suffering, second noble truth, and the fourth noble truth is hard work, and the third is not a truth, but a paradise realm somewhere else. It's also a truth. It's existing as a truth for us. So there are some comments on determination. I would like maybe we won't have questions now, because questions can lead, we can have questions a bit later. Maybe while it's fresh, this, I would like to suggest you go into couples, zugot, right, and take your space under a tree in the hall outside. There's a nice carob tree here with two lovely chairs. Find your corner in couples and contemplate your own personal where I am in with this puzzle of Shifa. Where I am with this puzzle, bearing in mind all the things I talked about. That it's not something straightforward. I have, I don't have. Or it's not enough, and I should have more. End of story. The way I've described it, there's a lot more in that than that. There's a lot more. So while it's fresh in the mind, the points I brought up, go into couples and take some time. Take at least half an hour to have time together in couples and discuss this. Okay? And then we can come back after that together and have some discussion, also what you've brought up for yourself in your personal experience about this aspect. Okay? And then we'll have a question after.